Okay, so Eliezer is going to come up and talk about the challenges of friendly AI.
So before I start, a quick comment. Someone approached me today and said, I understand that you're a creationist. And I said, what? And they said, well, you were talking yesterday about how it was impossible to evolve a butterfly. And I said, no, not impossible. Just amazing that it happened at all. I mean, so I just want to disclaim that not a creationist. Butterflies evolved. it's just an extremely inefficient way to make butterflies. Okay, so, and this is going to be a bit of, far future speculative type stuff, which I make no apologies whatsoever for. Thank you. one last thing about the these singularitarians. I don't think I've ever actually met one who said these things, but that's just me. So, let's say that you, a human being, are offered $1 million to win a chess game. One way you could try to win is by playing the chess game yourself. But what if you have to play 1,000 chess games? Playing 1,000 chess games is a lot of work. Laziness is one of the great virtues of a computer programmer. If you're lazy, then you might write a computer program, a narrow AI, to play chess for you. This is a lot more work than playing a single game of chess. Laziness is usually more work than hard work. But you only have to write the program once. How can you write a program to play chess? Could you imagine every possible chessboard and program in what you think is a good move for that position? Unfortunately, there's an exponentially vast space of possible chess positions. You need to save yourself some work here. You need to be lazy. You'll have to solve the problem on a higher, more general level than recording moves and playing them back. But wait a minute, how do you, a human, know which move to make in a position? Did your DNA pre-program you with all possible chess positions? By asking yourself, wait a minute, how did I decide to make that move? You realize that you have some criterion for judging your moves, and asking how did I judge uncovers opportunities to be lazy, to create a system that solves the problem on a higher level, to compress the problem using one algorithm instead of lots of little pre-programmed moves. In chess AI, the key idea is search. The criterion of a good move is that it leads to checkmating the opponent. The good move is the one that steers the future of the chessboard. Steers away from futures where the opponent checkmates you, and steers toward futures where you checkmate the opponent. By searching the game tree, we find moves that are likely to fit this criterion. Consider Deep Blue, the chess playing program that beat Kasparov for the World Championship. If Deep Blue's programmers had tried to program Deep Blue explicitly, tell it exactly which moves to make, then Deep Blue could never have played better chess than its programmers. So the programmers told Deep Blue what the consequence of its moves should be. And Deep Blue calculated which moves had which consequences. Deep Blue could search deeper than its programmers, so it could better foresee the consequences of a chess move, so it played better chess, bearing in mind that it had the right criterion of what it was searching for. Building a bulldozer is more difficult, requires a higher level of technology than shoveling dirt yourself. But a bulldozer can lift things too heavy for human muscles. By the power of laziness, you can do things that would be impossible with mere hard work. You may recall from yesterday's talk that one of the three major schools of singularity thought, Werner Vinge's Event Horizon, talks about the unpredictability of a world containing minds that are smarter than you. Deep Blue's programmers couldn't predict exactly which chess move Deep Blue would make during its tournament against Kasparov. If the programmers could have predicted Deep Blue, they would have been world champions themselves. So if you can't predict Deep Blue's moves, why not just use a random move generator? The unpredictability of a superior intelligence is not quite like the unpredictability of flipping a fair coin. The programmers couldn't predict Deep Blue's exact moves, but they could predict the consequence of Deep Blue's moves, which was that Deep Blue would win the chess game. We never bother to run a computer program unless we don't know the output, but we know some important fact about the output. The programmers couldn't guess the result of the search, but they understood the search. Writing a chess program is a lot of work. If you're really lazy, you might try to write a programming AI that would write the chess program for you. Of course, as usual with laziness, this is much more difficult than writing the chess program yourself. It's a completely different kind of AI. One kind of AI program is about chess, and the other AI program is about programs. So you have to move to a completely different domain and solve a completely different kind of problem to make this programming AI. Laziness often involves jumping up a level. It's a different kind of problem to build a bulldozer than to shovel dirt. And modern AI technology is not very good at this. But humans can do it. Humans can write computer programs. And therefore, we know that it is physically possible for a cognitive system to solve this problem, to exhibit this behavior of programming. Whatever humans do is possible for a cognitive system. A truly lazy AI researcher should have a reflex whenever they think about a problem that says, how am I thinking about this problem? Could I get an AI to think this way? You may not always be able to answer the question, but you should always ask it. If you don't ask unanswerable questions, you'll lose track of the important research problems and lose track of what you don't know. It's a lot of work to figure out how to write a programming AI, and it's so difficult that modern AI science is still working on it. Suppose you're really, really lazy. Then you might think, where does AI theory come from? I'll symbolize AI theory using the deservedly popular textbook Artificial Intelligence, A Modern Approach. Where did the knowledge in this book come from? From humans such as Peter Norvig. Human AI researchers wrote papers, thought about algorithms, carried out computational experiments, argued heatedly about the nature of intelligence. Since humans can do this kind of cognitive work, it must be physically possible. Maybe I can write an AI which thinks about AI theory for a while, does some experiments, and then outputs an AI textbook. This is going to take a whole new kind of AI, what you might call an AI theory AI. And modern AI science does not even begin to approach this kind of ultra-high-level reasoning. It may seem so abstract and airy that you wonder if it's a real problem, but this reflects our own lack of knowledge. The challenge is real, we just understand it poorly. Humans do think about AI theory, and an AI that can't think about AI theory will be below us. There will be thoughts we can think that it can't. So the obvious next question is, if you're really, really, really lazy, then what kind of AI do you need to write an AI theory AI? But here one strongly suspects that an AI that can output artificial intelligence, A Modern Approach, will, if you run it long enough, output itself. If human AI researchers can create an AI that thinks about AI theory at least as well as human AI researchers, that AI should be able to swallow itself and become a reflective AI. And this, as you may recall from yesterday's talk, is where the intelligence explosion comes in. This is how we have the mind that improves itself, the positive feedback cycle. The AI that can make itself smarter in ways that improve its ability to make itself even smarter. The human brain is finitely complex. The brain only has so many neurons patterned by a much smaller amount of DNA that tells it how to learn. It only takes a bounded amount of work to be ultimately lazy, to create the AI that can do everything humans can, including AI theory. It's not the last work we'll ever do, but it's the last job that we have to do whether we like it or not. Then what? When occasionally here's a line of reasoning that goes something like this. Someone says, when technology advances far enough, we'll be able to create minds far surpassing human intelligence. Now, it's clear that if you're baking a cheesecake, how large a cheesecake you can bake depends on your intelligence. A superintelligence could build enormous cheesecakes, cheesecakes the size of cities. And there's only a bounded amount of work you have to do to create a self-improving AI. By golly, the future will be full of giant cheesecakes. I call this the fallacy of the giant cheesecake. You can't jump from capability to actuality without considering the necessary intermediate of motive. So what will an AI's motives be? That's the $64 quadrillion trick question. In Hollywood movies, all the AIs are the same type, a single tribe. Asking what AIs will do is a trick question because it implies that AIs form a natural class. Humans do form a natural class because we all share the same brain architecture. We all have a visual cortex, frontal cortex, limbic system, and so on. But the phrase artificial intelligence actually refers to a vastly larger space of possibilities than when you say human. when we talk about AIs, we are really talking about minds in general. Imagine a map of mind design space. A tiny little circle contains all human minds. This is inside transhuman mind space, which includes all the human possibilities as a strict subset. This is inside posthuman mind space, which is, you might say, is everything a transhuman might grow up into. And then there's all the rest of mind design space, the space of minds in general, including AIs so strange they aren't even recognizably posthuman. And we need to reach into this enormously vast space of possibilities with very precise targeting and pull out a possibility which we won't regret having made real, a friendly AI, loosely speaking. Note that we care about the self-improvement trajectory, not just the starting point. Gandhi doesn't want to kill people, so if you offer Gandhi a pill that makes him want to kill people, Gandhi will refuse the pill because he knows that if he takes the pill, he'll want to kill people, and then they'll die, and the current Gandhi doesn't want those people killed. That's probably how goals are preserved in a self-improving system. And I wish I could prove this, but the current math for decision theory doesn't work well for describing self-modifying AIs. The current math goes into an infinite loop when you try to describe the AI modifying the part of itself that does the modifying. So this is one of the open research problems that needs solving before anyone can build a friendly AI, and this is in fact what I see as my research objective. but let's say that you solve the math problem. Now we get to the big question. What kind of friendly AI should you make? It's easy enough to describe all kinds of AIs you shouldn't make. Terminator? No. Agent Smith? No. HAL 9000? No. Now, all these examples are fictional. They never actually happened. This is an important point to bear in mind. You don't want to fall prey to the logical fallacy of generalization from fictional evidence. If you build an AI and everything works fine and you live happily ever after, it doesn't make a very interesting movie. Nonetheless, the classic cautionary tales do point up some interesting problems that emphasize the importance of certain kinds of laziness. One of the oldest cautionary tales about artificial intelligence artificial agents comes from the Philosophies of Lucian in 150 CE, and you may have heard of it as the Sorcerer's Apprentice. A broomer in Lucian's original story, a pestle, is enchanted to carry buckets and pour water into a cauldron, and the broom goes on doing this long after the cauldron is full. The apprentice wanted a cauldron full of water, but instead he made an artificial agent whose goal was to add water to the cauldron, a subtle but important difference. The apprentice did not ask for what he actually wanted. In philosophy, there is a distinction between terminal values, ends in themselves, and instrumental values, means to an end. Consider a heart transplant operation. When a surgeon opens up a patient, they're not cutting open the patient because they enjoy cutting people, and they're opening the patient to do a heart transplant. And they're not doing the heart transplant because they really like shuffling hearts around. They're doing it to save the patient. And then saving the patient's life is an end in itself, at least in my book. Now let's say you're creating an artificial moral agent to help with the heart transplant. You specify that the goal state is for the current heart to be outside the patient. Okay, the agent reaches in and rips the heart out. No, you say. The goal state also requires the aorta to be intact, and don't cut through this patient's spine either, or remove the patient's legs to make them easier to lift. How do you know to specify all these fine little details of the goal state? How do you know not to cut the patient's spine? Because you have a terminal value of improving the patient's health, and you know that cutting the spine will interfere with the patient's health. That's how you're generating all these complicated instructions. So the lazy way of solving this problem is to create an artificial agent that wants the same thing you want, to preserve the patient's health. If the agent wants the same kind of health you want, and it has a sufficiently good medical model of the patient, it will judge for itself that it shouldn't cut the spinal cord. And as usual here, the lazy way is more difficult. Is it necessarily a good thing to have a powerful AI with the terminal value of keeping humans healthy? The classic story, With Folded Hands, by Jack Williamson, is about AIs that try to keep humanity happy and safe. Happiness, safety, these are warm, fuzzy words. They generate good feelings in us. But Williamson's AIs put everyone into nice, safe nursery playpens and lobotomize anyone who isn't happy enough. Williamson's AIs had the terminal values of health and happiness. And who's against health and happiness? But Williamson's AIs didn't have terminal values for truth, justice, freedom, individuality, art, music, love, friendship, or any of the other things that we are happy about and stay alive for. The folded hands AI traded off security against freedom without caring about the other half of the equation, without having a term for freedom in their utility function. Just because health is a good thing doesn't mean that an ultra-powerful agent that only cares about health is a good thing. It could be extremely unpleasant to be around an ultra-powerful moral agent that shares only some, rather than all, of your terminal values. And I've probably got hundreds of terminal values. I can't print out the complete list any more than I can print out the positions of all the neurons in my cerebral cortex. The lazy solution would be a metamoral agent that looks at humans and figures out what their terminal values are. That might be an instruction you can specify more simply than just trying to describe the complete emotional makeup of humans. Or rather than trying to paint a picture, you polish up a mirror, and a mirror is a simpler thing than the picture. Don't paint all the tiny ethical details by hand. Make a metamoral mirror to reflect it all. And this involves moving into a different domain from ordinary morality, I should note. Another reason to be lazy is that human beings change their terminal values over time. If you write down your current morality in an AI, you are making into a fixed constant what ought to be a running process. An important thought experiment in thinking about this problem is to imagine that the ancient Greeks had discovered the principle of AI and set out to build an artificial moral agent. In ancient Greece, slavery was common and the status of woman was not much higher. If ancient Greece had possessed the power to look through time, to see our own future, if they had been allowed to peek at us and decide whether we should be allowed to come into existence, they would have vetoed our civilization out of hand for some reason or other. The decay of martial virtue. We no longer rejoice properly in slaying our enemies in hand-to-hand combat. What would the future have looked like if the ancient Greeks had had the capability to build a very powerful AI with their own moral values as fixed constants? This suggests that fixing your own moral values may be an extremely unwise strategy for building an AI, but that doesn't mean it's wise to shrug and give up. Our civilization is not the same as ancient Greek civilization, but we are unmistakably their heirs. If it's not that Greek morals were tossed away and new morals rolled up by dice at random. The unpredictability of a superior intelligence is not like the unpredictability of rolling dice. We got here by following a pathway from there. If the Greeks had shrugged and said, "We give up, we won't teach our children anything," it wouldn't have led to our future. Human beings are not perfect. But at least for now, it is only human beings who think this. It is we who have this conception that we are flawed. You will not find that judgment written upon the stars or mountains. They are not minds. They cannot think. It is we who have a sense of a direction that we are going in, and giving up, shrugging, will not push us forward in that direction. What we need is not to point an AI at our current values, but to point an AI at the moral trajectory it would follow over time. This is the advice we would want to give to the ancient Greeks. Tell your AI to look where you're going, not just where you are now. Unless, of course, you want to live in Plato's utopia. There's not really much time on a cosmic scale that separates us from ancient Greece, just a paltry 2,500 years, and everyone now and then was human. Beyond the singularity is a much greater gap than the one that separates us from ancient Greece. What is at stake for us is also the future, and we too are not so wise. It turns out to be really hard to think of any way to build an AI that does not automatically doom the galaxy. It's a hard problem. We cannot try to set down the right path for our children and our children's children forever, because that is the path that leads to Plato's utopia. Whether you ask one person or take a vote, you are equally doomed. All of us together are not wise enough, no more than the ancient Greeks would have been. We cannot shovel the stars with our own hands. We need an ethical bulldozer. We need the search process, not our own culture's outputs. The AI needs to go where we're going, not where we are. This human world, in all its beauty and horrible mess, is the starting point. Our wish to be better people defines a direction. Our sense of our own imperfection provides the force that pushes us forward, but if we knew where we were going, we would already be there. So if we can create an AI that mirrors our moral trajectory, is that the ultimate level of laziness? No. The ultimate and most difficult form of laziness is the AI that can have this whole conversation, the AI that can do all of this thinking about friendly AI, the friendly AI theory, friendly AI. That may seem so airy as to scarcely be a problem, but that reflects our own lack of understanding. We are having this conversation, and that is a real event that is actually taking place and has some type of underlying structure to it that we do not fully understand. Human beings can think about this sort of thing, therefore it is possible to a cognitive system. If we aren't lazy enough, if we transfer over our own ideas about friendliness rather than our ability to argue about friendly AI, the AI will be beneath us because it will have constants where we have thought processes. We have to make an AI that could understand or even output this talk, including this sentence. That is the last layer of laziness, the challenge of friendly AI.